Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Right from the Left Coast. Welcome, Ron and Rod and guest. Hopefully you can hear me. Somebody type in if there's sound. My name is Linda. I'm coming at you from good old northern part of San Diego in Oceanside. Another gorgeous 70 degrees. Beautiful sky. Light breeze. Amazing. Absolutely gorgeous. We are supposed to get tomorrow afternoon rain through this coming Sunday. So everybody keep doing rain dances and pray for us because we need rain big time. And don't forget patriotfamilies.com. www.patriotfamilies.com is where we get our stuff from. And please type in on a sound check because I don't know if you guys can hear me. And as far as it says I'm live and I kept hearing everything, so I just want to make sure and welcome everybody to the chat room and to the show. And I wanted to start today. There's so much going on. I don't even know where to start. But I know that hi, Cal. Good to see you here as well. Hope Bill can get in. If he wants to call in, I would somebody send him an email or something or Facebook him, get him in here. So I actually did Patriot Families and said try to call in, you know. So I wanted to go with what we were read in our studies at church this past Sunday, and it was the Gospel according to Matthew. And this is Matthew 5:38-48. And it's quoting, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? You therefore must be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." And that's our message for today. And thank you guys for all your comments in the chat room, and welcome, Ron. I'm just kind of going through what's been bugging me for the past week. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. And we're going to get inspired today.
Pardon me?
I felt a little inspired today. That was
Well, that thing you sent me on the 14th Amendment like lit up my life, and I'd like to get to that later. And that
Absolutely.
Poem, I definitely want to do, welcome FT and everybody and Cal and Rod and everyone. I want to get into some stuff that I've been going through here that makes sense and needs to be said. Also, I was thinking, and we'll do the poem as well, because I know once I get through this, I'll have plenty of time left. But and I was going to invite Ken into the program today because he said he wanted to talk, but I think next week we'll do that because he was having a financial problems, and I actually called his wife yesterday and said, if you guys need anything, please let me know. I want their needs to be met, and it was kind of a heart-rending thing for me. So let's pray for them, and hopefully things
Absolutely.
Will work out. They did not want my charity because they're too proud, but, you know, one of these days, if that happens again, they'll get a gift whether they want it or not, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't
pride,
have a lot.
Pride goeth before the fall.
Oh, man. I mean, it just broke my heart, you know, to think that they couldn't put gas in their car and stuff. So, okay, love them. Anyway, So we'll, I want to do the poem and also the stuff on the 14th Amendment, because I think what, I'm not really sure, but what Mark Levin has suggested, I think there was like 36 states last I heard, I don't know if it's true, this is all in the Facebook, have wanted to do this convention of states, which enumerates what they can vote on. It's not like they're just going to go willy-nilly through this. So I would love to see a convention of states saying to repeal the 14th. I mean, that we could vote on. I think that would be, and I don't even know how to do these things, but I think that would be extremely beneficial as we the people. What say you?
Well, I think really what they're talking about there is something that I think Bob Schultz has already done, and that is, in an essence, reestablishing the states at
right.
the local level. Because what currently passes for the state is not.
I know.
We've kind of covered this before.
Sure.
After the end of the Civil War, there was right. the states were conquered by conquest.
Well, look, you've talked about this, and there's the book that I'm going to be ordering after the show's done by DiLorenzo, which I think that will help me understand what went down with Lincoln.
Angry.
I've got plenty of duct tape to wrap around my head to see. I know. You should see my list. Here's my other list. I'm going to do this. They will all, some will enlighten me. I want Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. I want Rosa Curie's Behind the Green Masks. That's her. It's the coup de grace of Agenda 21. I would love to have The Real Lincoln, of course, and I want the one I think I want to read first is by David Horowitz called The Black Book of the American Left. I mean, that is going to like blow people's minds. So there's so much to tackle here. I mean, that's why I made my show notes and I'm like looking at it going, okay. So another thing that David put out the other day was the one I spoke about yesterday. It's called Obama's 1984 by Mark Tapson. Well, just some of this stuff, talking about Animal Farm and that book, 1984, this one paragraph states, as the fearless iconoclast Christopher Hitchens put it in his introduction to a combined volume of Orwell's political fable, Animal Farm and 1984, the latter can be read as a strong preventative medicine against the mentality of servility, and especially against the lethal temptation to exchange freedom for security, a bargain that invariably ends up with the surrender of both. Truer words were never spoken, because that's exactly what Benjamin Franklin said. I mean, I think he coined it from the beginning, and that was like, amen, I like that quote where he says, you will have none, you will surrender both, you will have none, and it's just ridiculous, it's a folly. So,
well, and you know, that's what I, that poem today, reading that really inspired me, because it's the same thing.
You know,
it embodies the exact same principle.
That poem, when he, the last paragraph reminded me so much of, first they came for the Catholics because then there was no one left to speak. I mean, that's exactly what I went through.
It's very powerful. So,
gosh, you're right. You got to do that one later today, and we'll put it on the board so you can. Yeah, you can probably record it and just get it in there if you have the ability. That'll be awesome. And we have Bill listening. I'm so sorry you can't get in. I don't know what's going on, Bill. But how are you doing? Are you there, sir? I see his number. Maybe he just. I don't know. Hopefully he can hear me because I unmuted. But anyway. What I wanted to do, because I had this conversation with my friend in Vista, Ken, and he, you know, I was talking about fascism, and he was, you know, saying that doesn't mean that and that doesn't mean this. So I said, okay, it's time to go back to the dictionary and start pulling stuff out. So I'm going to go to socialism, communism, fascism, and then lastly second to last, totalitarianism, and then feudalism, because we also had a disagreement about that word. So I want to get this.
Are you sure he's not disguising himself as Brown Beasley? Oh.
I know. No, I think there's something going on there that is, I don't know whether, I'm not seeing the whole picture. We didn't have enough time for him to, you know, fully explain himself, but there's just, you know, and I love him because I mean, he's had people come to our meetings talking about the dual constitutions, the one that they had in the beginning and the one they've screwed up to us now, which would be all these amendments we don't like. You know what I'm saying? There's a CD out there called The Tale of Two Constitutions instead of The Tale of Two Cities.
Well, it's true, and it began with that 14th
absolutely.
Amendment.
I agree with you. I mean, I am so in agreement. When I saw that, it's only 10 minutes long, and I did post that on Facebook, by the way, today, because I thought everyone who was out there could see it. I don't know if Bill can hear me. Are you still there, sir? Some reason he's not commenting. Okay, so we will go with the definition of socialism, and it's long because there's, different factions of it. Any of various economic and political theories advocating collective or governmental ownership and administration of the means of production and distribution of goods. A system of society or group living, commune living, in which there is no private property. That's not good. A system or condition of society in which the means of production are owned and controlled by the state. In my view, statism. A stage of society in Marxist theory transitional between capitalism and communism. How convenient. And distinguished by unequal distribution of goods and pay according to work done. That's like bordering on communism, as you know. The next one would be communism, and it is a theory advocating. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, redistribution of wealth.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it's redistributive.
Which is
smart. I've talked about this before, and I've heard one person on the forum, and I'm not trying to steal your thunder, but
no,
it is transitional. Socialism is only a transitional step in the mind of Marx to.
Yes.
Communism, and
right,
that was really the struggle Marx had. If you read his work, it's palpable that mm-hmm. he was infinitely frustrated with
right.
once you devise this strong, powerful, all-powerful state, how do you then transition into communism,
sure.
which is communal ownership of everything,
right?
And
right.
there is
and
no
it,
state.
It was a dichotomy, and he was completely messed up with his cognitive dissonance, absolutely. And out of his own mouth, he said that the goal of socialism is communism. So that was out of his own quotes. Now, if you go into communism, the dictionary definition, and I'm guessing that I can't pull things out of thin air, so I have to go to some source. A theory advocating elimination of private property. Which is Agenda 21, and according to the definition of socialism, they don't like private property either. A system in which goods are owned in common and are available to all as needed, each according to his needs, all that nonsense. Communism continued, a doctrine based on revolutionary Marxian socialism and Marxism-Leninism that is the official ideology of the old USSR. A totalitarian system of government in which a single authoritarian party controls state-owned means of production with the professed aim of establishing a stateless society. Again, it doesn't make sense. A final stage of... Yeah.
Well, it does in the fact that what you just defined, okay, the definition you just gave was the same definition as socialism. But the goal, again, still,
yes.
is a stateless society. It is collectivism at its peak with no central authority at all. And, if we could ever reach that, where everything belongs to everyone and there's no governing body, that might not be
such a terrible thing.
But the problem, again, is that transition
sure.
to where, that's the trouble. And you're never, once you create that state apparatus, there's mm-hmm. no getting rid of it. The state is not just going to fold up and say, okay, we give it all
yeah.
over to the people, and now everybody is co-partners, co-owners of everything.
Right.
and it's each according to his means, you know, or his needs, and each according to his means. Well, that's just never going to happen.
Right.
And that was what Mark struggled with.
Right, because I don't think he kind of understood the depth of God and human nature. I don't think he was...
Well, he rejected God outright.
Yeah, see, there you go. So you, if you're dealing with secularism, then nothing's going to make sense to you. You cannot... Look, we can go back... I have a feeling that Plato preceded Marx. So you go back to the philosopher
Certainly.
Kings, and apparently Karl did not understand that this is where these ideologies came from, and they're not ever going to work unless
well,
you
I think
can, like you do...
I think that's what sparked this continuing idea or ideology in all of these people. It was the philosophy
yes.
of this self-imagined utopia. And of course, you know, in Plato or Socrates in Plato's Republic,
right?
It was a republic, and it was all done by benevolence by the rulers that. So it was socialism.
Right. Well,
I
it's
mean,
also,
you know,
as I go further, it's kind of like totalitarianism because, I mean, all of these ideologies are, from where I'm sitting, if I read history correctly, they're iron-fisted. You know, North Korea is the Plato's Republic, and the people are in the box, and they're in the cave, and then they turn the lights out at night. I mean, that's what I'm seeing. I don't want any part of this stuff, okay?
Well, that's exactly what it is, and Marx knew that, you know, the only way to achieve the socialist state was through a revolution, if you will, a violent revolution, which is what we saw happen in the Bolshevik
yes.
Revolution and you know, yeah. communist or Soviet Russia. And,
yes.
and, you know, we use that term. So loosely, we use the term communism as if it's ever been achieved, and it's not. It's never been fully achieved. It just simply hasn't. It's never existed on this planet. There's been varying degrees of socialism marching towards communism, but communism, as it was defined by Marx at least, has never been realized.
Right, because let me go on with the last bit of this. And when
yes,
There's three more, and then once we go through each definition of these items, you know, you're gonna come to the conclusion of what I've been trying to explain to people is, you know, when you have a heavy-handed, iron-fisted government, this is not going to end well for anyone. I mean, I don't care who you are. This is not good. This is not freedom. This is not based in freedom. This is not based on Judeo-Christian ethics and Bible and Ten Commandments and all the rest of that stuff that our beloved founders were thinking about. I mean, I don't know. To me, like you said, we know that it's been flipped on its head, especially when I got reiterated with that 10-minute video, which was amazing. I mean, my God, it's just because it had been 5 years since I'd read The 5,000-Year Leap, which explains it quite well, by the way. And so does Mark Levin and Liberty and Tyranny. I would highly recommend all the books I've read because, you know, I'm getting a spectrum. I'm getting an incredible spectrum of wonderful authors. I'm connecting the dots. It's starting to make sense, and that's what I'm about. I'm trying to find the truth, and I held up my Bible last Sunday, and I said, well, when in doubt, you go to this if you want the truth. So.
Amen.
Amen. I mean, that's because people, you know, they keep arguing back and forth and this and that and the other thing. And it's like, well, I'm going with Jesus. In fact, a couple days from now, that movie's coming out, which is called Son of God. And that's the kind of condensed version of the Bible study that they did a few months back. And that was Roma Downey and her husband. So I'm ready to go see that. That's going to be kind of fun to see. I love being spiritually filled. So that's going to be a great amen.
You know, I had a guy today on one of the forums, and he is a communist sympathizer from the word go, and he writes this long diatribe about, you know, the Democrats at least are giving the money to help feed the poor and this and that and the other, and the Republicans just want to take the money and make people richer and yada, yada, yada. And I said, isn't that interesting? my band of thieves is better than yours because we give our stolen, ill-gotten goods to the poor. I said, the thing that you're failing to recognize in your whole diatribe is that both sides that you're speaking of are stealing from other people, regardless of what the purpose is that they're going to use their ill-gotten gains from is irrelevant.
The fact is,
they're thieves.
Yes.
Whether they have good intentions or not, I don't give a damn.
And
you know,
frankly,
I don't care what
their intent
is. They're thieves.
I don't think they do. I'm sorry, but I'm looking at this from what I'm seeing with the greed of people, everything that I've seen in the last, 10 years, and the things that you see on the illegitimate stage and are blatantly illegitimate. Of course, I call the D.C. the District of Criminals anyway. And that's another story, but the blatant ones like the cartels and these big names and the drug stuff, and the entire premise of that kind of a lifestyle is predicated on total greed and power. They don't care how on the edge they are. In other words, they have to look over their shoulder. They're crazy.
They try to rationalize it. They try to rationalize it, and they try to disguise the greed. Because they're not using the money for what they deem to be bad purposes, to enrich others,
right.
You know, to enrich the rich. They're trying to spread the wealth, redistribute. I'm sorry. The fact of the matter is you're trying to shine a turd. You're trying to polish up.
Polish
theft.
It. That's what the libtards do.
I mean, if I went in and robbed a bank and said, but my God, I'm giving all this this money to St. Teresa's Orphanage, you know?
They don't care.
They don't give a damn. My ass is going to jail, as it should.
Unless your name's Eric Holder and he's out speaking to the...
Oh, my God.
Did you hear what he said to the AGs of the state? I mean...
Oh, yeah. The guy should be brought up on
the guy,
charges.
I'll tell you where he should be. I'll tell you where he should be right now. They should bring back the little stocks and put him in to have the tomatoes thrown at his face. That's where he should be. I'm telling you right now. I mean, you know me. That's just where we are. Okay, we're going to the last paragraph of communism. A final stage of society in Marxist theory in which the state has withered away and economic goods are distributed equitably, which is a fantasy. Okay, let's go to fascism. Because this was another bone of contention along with feudalism. So we'll get to those in a second. Fascism, a political philosophy, movement, or regime that exalts nation and race above the individual. That's bad enough. And that stands for a centralized autocratic government. God, sounds so familiar. Headed by a dictatorial leader. Sounds like something that Barry loves to think about. Severe economic and social regimentation and forcible suppression of opposition, like the IRS is trying to do. A tendency toward or actual exercise of strong autocratic or dictatorial control. And there was another thing that they were talking about on Glenn's show today, and I think it was Cass Sunstein and this FCC stuff, and there was just a ton of this stuff where they had uncovered. Snowden, I guess, talked about it just recently. And this whole theory of infiltrating the newsrooms, and then there's this new clown that called into Hannity today. He was a black guy, and I thought he was just a caller until Sean revealed this guy was running for office. I don't know his name because I didn't catch up art or what state he was in, running for Congress, who was absolutely thinking the committee should be formed to do these things. And I'm just like, oh, my God. I mean, what's going on right now is just there needs to be.
Well, there's something else going on that I'm noticing quite a lot. And it's subtle, but it's not so subtle. And I hate to even do the whole racial divide thing, but I'm telling you, there's a Mayor Bloomberg is funding a group here in Georgia because Georgia has a new House Bill 875 about constitutional carry. It's come up again in our state legislature, and so he's giving money to this anti-gun group. And one of their ads has pictures of like eight children in pairs Okay. One child's holding an ice cream cone. The other child's holding a handgun. And then in the next picture, one child's holding a basketball and the other child's holding an AR-15. And so you go down, you get the idea, you know. And there's something that stands out when you look at the picture. Every one of the kids that's holding a gun is a white kid. And every one of the kids that's not holding a gun is some other ethnicity, you know, Asian, Hispanic, black, yeah. whatever. Uh-huh. So all the white kids are holding guns. And, I saw a television commercial last night, and it just kind of struck me. You know, they were I don't even know what the commercial was for. I wasn't even paying attention. Mm. I just happened to catch the end of it. And they were on this beach, you know, and here comes this black guy dressed real dapper in a tux, you know, on the whole nine, and not that there's anything wrong with that. And then here comes the white guy looking like Robinson Crusoe hanging on him, and he looks down and he's like, don't do that. So it's a reversal of this portrayal that we're being fed in this advertising.
There is so much stuff going on. I don't care whether it's Fox, and believe me, AM radio is driving me nuts. And you know, because you talked about this on your show several times, that
Sirius
Satellite
is the only one I listen to.
Yeah, the same people are funding all of this stuff. All of the sponsors are the same, left, right, middle, you know, and it's crazy.
Well, it's the old Rothschild, you know, the banker's concept. You fund both sides of the war. That way, no matter who wins, you come out on top.
What's weird is I'm seeing this at Fox News as well. I mean, they're like, here's what's going on. This is what it looks like to me. It looks like Fox has become as MSNBC Lite, if that makes sense. This is what, and it's creeping through, because not only the sponsors and the propaganda, but the way they run their shows, the crap they talk about, the spin. I heard Stuart Varney today, because I was working out and I was watching it on the screen. He was talking to Neil Cavuto, and this man absolutely, whether he believes it or not, is spouting it, that the answer to this nonsense on the debt situation is through elections. I almost came unglued inside of the machine that I was on. I mean,
there is a new show on Fox Business called The Independents. I cannot even watch 2 minutes of that.
Okay,
it's the most disgusting.
It's crazy.
God, turn it off. They're just a bunch of loons.
So here I'm going to go with this part a little bit. We still have half.
I'm rambling you on.
Totalitarianism, centralized control by an autocratic authority, the political concept that the citizens should be totally subject to an absolute state authority. Well, this is, I think, the goal of many.
I think we're pretty damn close to that already.
Well, they're trying. They haven't done it yet. I mean, I'm still sitting here. They haven't got me in handcuffs today, trying to get me into a boxcar. That's about around the corner. That's why I still keep that shotgun nicely available. Okay. The next one and last one is feudalism, the system of political organization prevailing in Europe from about the 19th to the 15th centuries, having at its basis the relation of lord to vassal with all land held in fee and as chief characteristics homage, the service of tenants under arms and in court, wardship, and forfeiture, any of various political or social systems similar to medieval feudalism. So that, to me, when I read that one, that's Agenda 21 sitting in my hands right there. I know that's that goal. They are doing it, they're trying it, and all these things. This makes me crazy. Again, I don't know if Bill's in here. I've got him on the thing. Hope he can hear me. Are you there, Bill? I can't tell. Okay. I don't know. Hopefully he can hear. He's unmuted, so maybe there's a whole crew. I know those kids, there's like many of them love to listen. This is since I finished the book, I wanted to go through this because it made a lot of sense, and we're going to do all these things with the 14th Amendment and your poem in a minute, but I wanted to go through the last portion that really hit home with me on the creature from Jekyll Island. And the summary was on the London connection, and it said, after the Civil War, America experienced a series of expansions and contractions of the money supply, leading directly to economic booms and busts. This was the result of the creation of fiat money by a banking system which, far from being free and competitive, let's see, I think he was on. Let me see if I can get him back. Is that you, Bill?
It's me. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't hear you before, so I guess he tried again. I was hoping you could hear the show, even though you were just
We could hear the show, and it's been a great show. You guys have been, I mean, you're
Thank
hitting
you.
On what's going on, and I agree with you. This is turning liberal. And,
it's
we
bad.
Gotta do our own, we got to keep doing our own research and stuff.
You
because
bet.
We're never going to find out the truth from the media.
No, not at all. So let me finish this part, and I'm going to get to the crux of this, the ending of this book, which I found fascinating, and then we're going to go to what the answers are, some of the answers are that I saw today, and that poem that you did, Ron, so we'll get to that in a second. The banking system, far from being competitive, was halfway house to central banking. Throughout the chaos, one banking firm, the House of Morgan, was able to prosper out of the failure of others. Morgan had close ties with the financial structure and culture of England and was, in fact, more British than American. Events suggest the possibility that Morgan and Company was in concealed partnership with the House of Rothschild throughout most of this period, which doesn't surprise me. I'm not disparaging the last name of Mr. Strong here, but this Benjamin Strong back in the day was a Morgan man and was appointed as the first governor of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which rapidly assumed dominance over the system. Strong immediately entered into close alliance with Montague Norman, governor of the Bank of England, to save the English economy from depression. This was accomplished by deliberately creating inflation in the United States, which caused an outflow of gold, a loss of foreign markets, unemployment, and speculation in the stock market, all of which were factors that propelled America into the crash of 1929 and the Great Depression of the 30s. Although not covered in this chapter, it must be remembered that the same forces were responsible for American involvement in both world wars to provide the economic and military resources England needed to survive. Furthermore, the key players in this action were men who were part of the network of a secret society established by Cecil Rhodes for the expansion of the British Empire. How nice. Okay, here's real quickly, I wanted to go at this, which was included in this book, and I know you guys, it's been a long time since both of you read this, but it's really, really interesting. And these are the natural laws of human behavior and in economics. One, lesson when gold or silver is used as money and when the forces of supply and demand are not thwarted by government intervention. The amount of new metal added to the money supply will always be closely proportional to the expanding services and goods which can be purchased with it. Sounds like Econ 101 to me. Long-term stability of prices is the dependable result of these forces. The process is automatic and impartial. Any attempt by politicians to intervene will destroy the benefit for all. Therefore, long-term price stability is possible only when the money supply is based upon the gold or silver supply without government interference. What do you guys think about that one?
Gold I and think silver. That, absolutely. You know, I think that I've been talking about this since I got on here.
My gosh, I know. And that's why I was so happy to finish this, because it just, there was only five naturals, but I want to get through them and then go to what G. Edward Griffin thought was the answer. And it's just his suggestions, but there was, and I'm just going to kind of go through the bold headlines of it. But the natural law too, whenever government sets out to manipulate the money supply, regardless of the intelligence or good intentions of those who attempt to direct the process, the result is inflation, economic chaos, and political upheaval. By contrast, whenever government is limited in its monetary power to only the maintenance of honest weights and measures of precious metals, according to the Constitution, the result is price stability, economic prosperity, and political tranquility. Therefore, a nation For a nation to enjoy economic prosperity and political tranquility, the monetary power of its politicians must be limited solely to the maintenance of honest wage and measures of precious metals. Hello? I mean, how many times has Ron Paul had to say that in how many different ways?
The long and the short of it is that under the current system, the people are robbed of the power of their labors.
Exactly.
You know, whether you're using paper, gold, silver, diamonds, you know, sticks, shells, stones, if it's all controlled mm-hmm. and contrived by a central bank,
right,
and it's just conjured up, then the people have no control and they have no power.
Right.
With the just weights and measures, with a system of just weights and measures,
right,
the power of the money belongs to the people.
Sure.
And that's where it rightly
where it
should
be. Yes. And the next
even
one is fiat money. Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Even the Bible talked about just weights and measures.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Yep, that's why that was incorporated.
Funny, how those lessons are hard to learn, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, fiat money is paper money without precious metal backing and which people are required by law to accept. That's the legal tender laws, which stink. It allows politicians to increase spending without raising taxes. Fiat money is the cause of inflation, and the amount which people lose in purchasing power is exactly the amount which is taken from them and transferred to their government by this process. Inflation, therefore, is a hidden tax. This tax is the most unfair of all because it falls most heavily on those who are least able to pay, the small wage earner and those on fixed incomes. It also punishes the thrifty by eroding the value of their savings. This creates resentment among the people, leading always to political unrest and national disunity. Therefore, a nation that resorts to the use of fiat money has doomed itself to economic hardship and political disunity. I mean, it's just a vicious circle, and it's just making us nuts. The last two is fractional money is paper money, which is backed by precious metals up to only a portion of the face amount. It is a hybrid, being part receipt money and part fiat money. Generally, the public is unaware of this fact and believes that fractional money can be redeemed in full at any time. When the truth is discovered, as periodically happens, there are runs on the bank, and the only the first few deposits in line can be paid, since fractional money earns just as much interest for the bankers as does gold or silver. The temptation is great for them to create as much of it as possible. As this happens, the fraction which represents the reserve becomes smaller and smaller until eventually it is reduced to zero. Therefore, fractional money will always degenerate into fiat money. It is but fiat money in transition. Wow. That was... That's amazing. So,
aren't we headed that direction with this Bitcoin and the virtual money?
Well, I think that Bitcoin thing
Bitcoin's
is kind of a
done.
Flop.
It's done.
I don't know that it's done, but it's pretty much a flop. But you know, for me, the obvious thing when you're looking at monetary systems and how they're structured, and when you look at things like inflation, inflation truly is an increase in the supply of money. And
right.
In the current system that we have, there is an infinite supply of money. So money can always outstrip production and demand. So it creates artificial demand.
Sure.
And what Paul and the Austrians have deemed as malinvestment. You know, it makes people take risks on foolish things that, like Solyndra, for instance.
Well, it's worse than that because, that's, to me, that was just, but what it does, it sends the false triggers.
With a sound monetary system that uses just weights and measures that we're not able to manipulate the weight and purity, the measure of our coinage, what happens there is prices tend to decline over time as production increases. I mean, you think about the amount of time that it takes to produce a home, to mill the lumber,
right,
to assemble it into a house. Do you think that it takes less time today than it did in 1910 or more time today to build a home? The answer is fairly obvious. Look at the size of the homes that we're building today
right.
compared right. the average home in 1910. There was a reason for that. Okay? And yet we're paying exponentially more for the homes that are being built. Prices should be falling. And what happens when prices are steadily falling and yet profits remain high in business, it
sure.
benefits those people that are the poorest in society the most, mm. which is the opposite of the system we
yes.
currently have.
Right. So, well, when you talk about the money supply and what they've done is how they've manipulated the market pretty much, it sends a false signal to investors and to entrepreneurship and
yep.
and people who are doing business with building houses or whatever, whether it's a hot dog stand or a house builder, they're still sending false things where the people don't know what the heck they're supposed to do in the natural and in with a real free market, none of this BS would be happening. They would know what the signals are by the people.
In a truly free market with
right.
sound money, that money is very valuable, and it's not something you just squander.
Sure.
You know, when money's cheap and easy, at least for those with credit and abilities.
Yeah.
You know, and the higher you go up the food chain, the
yes.
easier money is to obtain. You know, when you're poor, money's hard to come by, no matter
yeah.
what. No matter which system you're in, money's tough to come by when you're poor. But in our current system, it's really tough to come by. Nearly
right.
impossible. God forbid you should find yourself in a position of needing a loan. You're SOL.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're SOL.
I can remember being young, and jobs were hard to come by. And your family then went out and fished and hunted. They grew gardens and stuff to help make it through the year. We have a current government that's trying to stop us from doing all those things.
Oh, absolutely. And you didn't just throw things away. You fixed them.
Yes. And the other thing, oh, absolutely, the thriftiness of people, the basic things of sewing or the basic things of even repairing shoes. Honey, I've repaired more jazz shoes, toe shoes, and ballet shoes than you could shake a stick at. And I've had plenty of pricked fingers to tell about it. But anyway, I've always repaired costumes. We had to do that on the road. People don't understand the value of these things. There's so much to be covered by this. Who was it that... Oh, this idiot, I can't remember her name, but she was on Hannity last night. I go back and forth between that and Criminal Minds because it's all the same, Criminal Minds, criminal, you know. And so she's actually said that the way to fix the problems of the economy is to raise the minimum wage for federal workers to $10.10 an hour. I mean, I was ready to throw some shoes at the TV, my point shoes that were repaired by my fingers. I mean,
Well, it's always, it's always a good sell. How can you not want to pay these poor downtrodden workers $10 an hour? And, you know, it's no different than, well, my party's better than your party because we want to give the money that we steal from you to the poor. It's the same thing.
They say that. But when you look at the statistics...
Well, I know. When you look at the actual figures...
Right.
It's the opposite.
I know.
They give their money to the wealthy on their side.
Yeah.
Not the poor, the wealthy.
Right. No, I know.
Day.
They get away with it. They get away with it.
I got names for you, too. Okay, let's go with just the left side, and that would be Barry's buddies, you know, like... Emelt and Buffett and whoever else is coming down the pike.
The two wealthiest men in the United States.
I know. I mean, look, I know what...
And they're both Obama supporters.
You every time you...
You got to go down that list the way to get to the Koch brothers.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not even sure who the Koch brothers are. I hear this bandied about by the left all the time. All I know is
Iowa, I think. But don't let them fool you, because they supported Clinton. So they don't want you to hear that either. But anyway,
no, the whole thing is it's like a blanket of lies. It's like that whole mask thing. You know, they're just hiding under these sheep's clothing every day, every one of them. And we all know that there was only a handful, if even a handful. I know Ron Paul, I think, and Paul Brown from your area, Ron, might be one, and Justin Amash. But, I mean, I don't know who else that they don't knock on their doors, because they can't be touched. They're not going to be put the touch on. They're not going to submit to this nonsense. And there's only a few. So, you know, you gotta understand. They're all,
and look,
I'm
telling you right now, and that is why, you know, God bless whoever posted that poem up today, because
I read that,
I thought, you know, this is, if you take out the subject matter and insert, you know, taking your property from you against your will, or taking your life,
freedom of speech,
against your, you know, it's all the same thing. And this strikes right at the heart of what we've been talking about. And I'm stoked to find out, just doing a little search here, that there's actually a movie that is made after this poem. And it's called The Hangman by Maurice Ogden.
Wow.
Into our town the hangman came, smelling of gold and blood and flame. And he paced our bricks with a different air, and built his frame on the courthouse square. The scaffold stood by the courthouse side, only as wide as the door was wide. A frame as tall, or a little more, than the capping sill of the courthouse door. And we wondered, whenever we had the time, who the criminal, what the crime. The hangman judged with a yellow twist of knotted hemp in his busy fist. And innocent though we were, with dread we passed those eyes of buckshot lead, till one cried, "Hangman, who is he for whom you raise the gallows tree?" Then a twinkle grew in his buckshot eye, and he gave us a riddle instead of reply. "He who serves me best," said he, "shall earn the rope on the gallows tree." And he stepped down and laid his hand on a man who came from another land, and we breathed again for another's grief. At the hangman's hand was our relief. And the gallows frame on the courthouse lawn by tomorrow's sun would be struck and gone. So we gave him way, and no one spoke, out of respect for his hangman's cloak. The next day's sun looked mildly down on roof and street in our quiet town, and stark and black in the morning air, the gallows tree on the courthouse square. And the hangman stood at his usual stand with the yellow hemp in his busy hand, with his buckshot eye and his jaw like a pike, and his air so knowing and businesslike. And we cried, "Hangman, have you not done yesterday with the alien one?" Then we fell silent and stood amazed. Oh, not for him was the gallows raised. He laughed a laugh as he looked at us. "Did you think I'd gone to all this fuss to hang one man? That's a thing I do to stretch the rope when the rope is new." Then one cried, "Murderer!" One cried, "Shame!" And into our midst the hangman came to that man's place. "Do you hold," he said, "with him that was meant for the gallows tree?" And he laid his hand on that one's arm, and we shrank back in quick alarm. And we gave him way, and no one spoke out of fear of his hangman's cloak. That night we saw with dread surprise the hangman's scaffold had grown in size. Fed by the blood beneath the chute, the gallows tree had taken root. now as wide or a little more than the steps that led to the courthouse door, as tall as the writing or nearly as tall, halfway up the courthouse wall. The third he took, we had all heard tell, was a usurer and infidel. "And what," said the hangman, have you to do with the gallows bound, and he a Jew?" And we cried out, "Is this the one who has served you well and faithfully?" The hangman smiled, "It's a clever scheme to try the strength of the gallows beam." The fourth man's dark, accusing song had scratched out our comfort hard and long. "And what concern," he gave us back, "have you for the doomed and black?" The fifth and sixth again we cried, "Hangman, hangman, is this the man?" "It's a trick," he said, "that we hangmen know for easing the trap when the trap springs slow." And so we ceased and asked no more, as the hangman tallied his bloody score. And sun by sun and night by night, the gallows grew to monstrous height. The wings of the scaffold opened wide till they covered the square from side to side, and the monster crossbeam looking down cast its shadow across our town. Then through the town the hangman came, called in the empty streets, "My name." And I looked at the gallows soaring tall, and I thought, "There is no one left at all for hanging." And so he calls me to help pull down the gallows tree. And I went out with right good rope to the hangman's tree and the hangman's rope. He smiled at me as I came down to the courthouse square through the silent town, and supple and stretched in his busy hand was the yellow twist of hempen strand. And he whistled his tune as he tried the trap, and it sprang down with a ready snap. And then with a smile of awful command, he laid his hand upon my hand. "You tricked me, hangman," I shouted then, "that your scaffold was built for other men. And I know henchmen of yours," I cried. "You lied to me, hangman, foully lied." Then a twinkle grew in his buckshot eye. "Lied to you? Tricked you?" he said. "Not I, for I answered straight and I told you true. The scaffold was raised for none but you. For who has served me more faithfully than with your coward's hope?" said he. "And where are the others that might have stood by your side in the common good?" "Dead," I whispered. "And aimably murdered," the hangman corrected me. "First the alien, then the Jew. I did no more than you let me do." Beneath that beam that blocked the sky, none had stood so alone as I. And the hangman strapped me, and no voice there cried stay for me in the empty square.
Yay. Good one. That's amazing. I mean, it's so...
Who wrote that?
Wow.
The gentleman's name is Maurice Ogden. And, you know, it really speaks to what we have allowed in this country, what we've talked about over and over.
And over again.
You know, we get angry with our government. We get angry with our elected officials. But, ladies and gentlemen, we are the ones that have silently gone through town hoping that the hangman is there to hang someone other than us until everybody else is gone and we're the only ones left. And he's like, "You have served me perfectly."
Mm-hmm.
"And it's for you that I built the gallows. Now come on up and earn your reward." That's exactly what we're doing in this country and have been doing for decades.
For too long. And that ties in with what I said in the beginning, where it's, I'm quoting scripture, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Because Jesus has the answer. And let us be clear. That's who I'm turning to.
I gotta be honest, of course, I love to read history,
but this guy, he got it. He's my man.
I've had a few enemies that we had conflicts And after the conflicts, we became very close friends. Sometimes that's what it takes.
Maybe, yep.
We have set back, and every aspect of our lives, people have plotted how they were going to take control over those, and we've set back while they started doing it. And that's how they've gotten so far, is because we were sitting there with our eyes closed. We weren't paying
True.
Attention. Rob said, well, it's decades and decades.
Yeah, well, look, honest to God, if we are truly honest with ourselves, it began before the founding of this country.
Sure.
The founding fathers did it with slavery. They did it with the Indians.
Sure.
They did it with the blacks after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's be honest here.
Yep.
Socioeconomic class, if you're just plain white trash, you're just plain white trash. If you're not, you know, upper middle class, you're unworthy. We just continue doing it. Nothing's going to change unless we change how we approach things. And that's why I continue to say that unless we fully embrace the idea, the concept
mm-hmm.
that was laid out in the Declaration
yes.
of Independence, that all men are created equal, and that we should have a government that treats every individual the same, no variance whatsoever.
Right.
Until we can get past this ideology, this is why, to me, all of these blue laws and all of this junk is just that. It's junk. You know,
right.
There was a discussion today about DUI and the problem that they're facing in Colorado, okay? And there was a statistical study done. Marijuana stays in your system, detectably in your system, for much longer
days.
Than alcohol does, right?
Yeah.
40 to 45 days.
There was this study done on crash fatalities in automobiles, and what they found was that 1 in 9 or 12% of the people involved in fatal auto accidents had used marijuana. But here's the problem. That doesn't tell you, it doesn't give you a correlation
mm-hmm.
between marijuana use and fatal auto accidents, because there's no way to
right.
demonstrate that those individuals were under the influence, the altering influences, the
right.
changes
I mean,
your motor skill response times.
Sure.
It's just that they had used marijuana at some time in the past. And my response is this. If you damage someone's property
right.
through a negligent act,
sure.
doesn't
or
matter.
A person.
It doesn't matter to me if you were drunk, stoned, on heroin, PCP,
or
LSD.
Not.
I don't care. That's not the point. The point is you've caused damage to person or property. That is the point, and that
right.
is the crime.
Right.
The rest of it is inconsequential. Unless
you
want to say that you know, there are people that want to argue a diminished capacity because they were intoxicated. Hey, you know what? That's your own negligence. You knew or should have known,
right.
and if you didn't, then, you know, shame on you. You're still responsible for your actions, and here they
yes.
are. So if we can get rid of all that bullcrap law.
I know.
Because it's semantics. It's just
you
semantics.
Know what, Ron, do you know how much money is made by each state when somebody gets picked up for DUI? I mean,
oh,
Mike.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, it's astronomical.
Look, the war on drugs and the war on DUI
yep.
is no more successful than the war
than
on poverty.
The rest of this nonsense. Yeah,
right.
Oh, well, look, because it's fake. It's as fake as our money. Hello.
Well, that's exactly it. You cannot cure immorality or foolish behavior or accidental stupidity by writing a law. You can't write
right.
it on a piece of paper and it magically makes things better. It just doesn't work
I
that
know.
Way.
I got a couple seconds left, and we're going to next week I'll continue on the 14th Amendment, the resolution thereof. You and I can go through that if we have time. and anyone else who wants to come in, and also whatever else we need to cover. Like I said the other day, I need a giant document shredder because some of this stuff, you know what, Ron, if it's unconstitutional and it's not for real, we don't have to abide by it. It's not law. It's not.
Well, I understand, but that doesn't stop the courts at all. And me, it is a god-awful expense to try and get
they're
a case
cut me
before
off.
The Supreme
God bless
Court.
You guys.
So, God bless.
And yeah, they're going to probably get about 10 seconds. Bill, thanks so much. I'm glad you guys and your crew could hang out. All my guests, 463-461-3486 and 3851, I'm not sure, but I love you guys. And God bless. Have a great night, and we're going to go. Love you all. See you tomorrow.
See ya. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.